Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. She's from Fresno. She's got SOFR in Orange County. She loves service. She's a part of ACUPAW, which is going on this weekend, which is really exciting. And she said she's crazy, y'all. So here's Caitlin R.
Awesome. Hi, guys. My name is Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I first want to welcome anybody that's new or anybody that did not identify. Welcome to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sobriety date of May 4th of 2019. This morning I woke up and I read pages 60 to 63, proportion of 67, proportion of 76, 84 through 89. I said a third and a seventh step prayer. I said I read a portion of 417 and 164. And I like to share that, right, because I like to let people know that, you know, the program is the book, right? That was told to me early on when I was new. And I didn't know that. You know, I thought that, like, I could be a meeting maker and I could make it. I didn't know that I had to, like, open this book that was written by a bunch of these old guys in this old English, you know what I'm saying? And I didn't relate to anything of that. You know, unfortunately for me in my story, I got about 10 months clean, you know, and then I decided to go get some more bitter experience, went on a little bender, you know, and I don't know, for me, I am a high volume meth addict who likes to end up at a treatment center where my mom and dad, you know, they front the money for me to be able to go. I'm manipulative, selfish, self-centered, you know, and I don't care who I tear down, you know. I choose to be homeless in my car because at a certain point, I'm, you know, unable to have my self-will, you know. Like, I've crossed over into that gray area, you know. Don't know when it happened, but unfortunately, I start getting loaded against my own will, right? I even choose, you know, to, like, drop my kid off with whichever family member will watch him, you know, because I can't stop getting loaded. So a little bit about me, you know, I grew up in Fresno, California, have two parents that are married, you know, nothing crazy, a brother and a sister, had every opportunity afforded to me, and I don't know, there was nothing wrong, there was not a cloud on the horizon, like it says in the book, right? Like, I don't know, I took my first drink probably around 19, and from there I was a blackout drinker. A few months after that, you know, I was in college, and eventually, like, it was just the parties, and it wasn't going to class, and I got kicked out of school, you know, and that meant that I got kicked out of my house, too. And I felt like maybe getting, like, three jobs and, like, riding my bike to these jobs, you know, and, like, I can pay a little bit of bills here and there. Like, I can be a little bit self-supporting, you know, and I'm going to make it. You know, I really want to be a cosmetologist. I don't have a problem. You know, I didn't see the problem with drinking until it was blackout every single day. And, you know, I did that for a while, and everything was pretty good. I got a few material things, you know, and then I always like to run from my problems, you know what I mean? And I don't know. So from there, I finally went to cosmetology school, and probably got about 3 months in, and met a dude, you know, because that's the other addiction for me, is I like emotionally unavailable men who've done at least 10 to 15 years in prison, you know, so... Mm. Got with him, and, you know, I don't know, I ended up getting pregnant, and, you know, took a leave of absence from school. I did finish, so, you know, but, during that time, we were partying, and we were doing all of these things, and, I, like, lived in this delusion that I could have this normal life. You know, I was, by the grace of God, you know, I wasn't, getting loaded while I was pregnant, you know what I mean? That's like a yet for me, and, I was super resentful. Super resentful at him because he was still going out and doing all of these things, and I was just super restless, irritable, and discontented at all of that, you know, looking back on that whole situation, you know. That relationship got super abusive, too, you know, and I just continued to stay and put up with it. Until about my son was about 2 years old, I decided to finally pack all of his stuff and take him out of the house, you know, and that's really where my alcoholism took off, you know, because I started to have places where I could take my kid, you know what I mean? And dad wasn't showing up anymore, and I needed a break, and I'm working a full-time job, and now I'm managing a salon, and I'm doing all these things, you know, I'm doing cocaine in my office just to keep going. So I don't know, I just blamed it all on everybody else. Blamed it all on the other people, my circumstances, you know, regardless of how I was getting loaded before those circumstances happened. And I don't know, I tried, I think we were reading about it, right? Like, I tried, like, all different types of things, you know, after that, jumping around, getting different promotions at work. I thought maybe I need to, like, remove myself from the friends that I have, right? Like, they were the problem. I don't need to go out with these people anymore. I, at one point, too, lost my ID and, like, told myself I'm not going to go to the DMV. But, like, it didn't matter because all the bars knew and they would just let me in anyway, you know what I mean? So it didn't matter at that point. Tried all of these things. Tried going to the gym. Tried doing Arvon, you know, being, like, a fitness coach. That kept me sober for a little bit, you know, and then the thing that really, you know, took me to the gates of, you know, insanity or death almost, you know, for me was meth. You know, I saw my neighbor smoking meth and I just wanted to know what that felt like. You know, I didn't want to feel responsible for anything anymore. I didn't want to, like, think about my problems, you know, and I don't know. Things got pretty out of hand from there. I ended up meeting another dude who moved into my house, and eventually my house was raided, and lost everything that I had, lost my business at the time, lost my home, you know, luckily I did not lose my kid at that time, and I don't know, just doing all kinds of weird things, you know, making runs to Arkansas, stealing my dad's car, having dangerous activity go on in my room with my son there, people smoking dope and shooting up in my bathroom at my house, you know, with my son there, and not being able to, like, have any control over that situation. So from there, you know, I finally decided to kick this dude out after my house was raided, and thought that I could, like, get rid of all the paraphernalia, stop all, like, the weird behaviors. I had done this before, you know, with my son's dad. And so that's what I did. You know, I asked my sister down in Long Beach if she could take my son for a week because she was a preschool teacher at the time, and she said yes, you know, and they saw me. They saw me, and I was 95 pounds soaking wet, you know, and I didn't think I had a problem. You know, I didn't think that I, like, I thought I was hot shit, you know what I mean? Like, I was looking in the mirror, and I was seeing, I was just getting away with all of these things, you know, and I didn't know the gig was up yet, you know? So she took him, and of course, being loaded like I was, right? Like, I'm never on time. I was 2 days late picking my son up. And when I got to my aunt's house, who also lives down there, you know, my son, he wasn't there, you know? And I don't know, like, that was the first time that I was actually able to admit that I had a problem, you know? I'm like, what took you guys so long, you know? Like, I've just been burning my life to the ground, hoping that one of you would, like, pick up the pieces for me. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to do it myself. I wanted somebody else to do it. And so I recently just had a conversation with my aunt, who I made an amends to a couple years ago, you know, and she was telling me, in my mind, I thought it only took me about 30 minutes to, like, give over my keys and say, you know, let's go to a detox, whatever. No, she told me it took me about 3 hours to be convinced. You know what I mean? So, like, having that conversation and, like, having that reality check of, like, those circumstances, you know, and I get to, like, share that with other people today. My delusions are smashed today, you know, so, yeah, I don't know, so I had brought my friend with me, he was a heroin addict, and I dropped him off in the parking lot of an In-N-Out, too, and, like, I didn't tell her that he had come with me, you know, and, like, I told her we needed a drive-through In-N-Out, I, like, gave him all the money I had. So he could get a bus home, and I went with her to a hospital in Southern California. And, you know, of course, I can't be honest with doctors either. You know, I don't want to tell them what's going on. No, I only smoked meth, like, 2 days ago. You know, they're like, this seems like a family issue, you know what I mean? If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. And my aunt was, like, wanting me to get a blood test and do all these things. Now, mind you, I didn't know at the time that they don't necessarily do meth detoxes, right? So she was trying to get them to do blood work to see if there was anything else in my system to try to just convince me to stay and get the help that I needed, you know, because I needed to be physically removed from that drug. But I was unwilling to do that. So she put me up in a hotel room after we left that hospital, and she told me that I'm not going to be responsible for your death. I'm not going to be responsible for your death. If you can't be honest about what you're using or if you can't do the things that you need to do, then you can die in this hotel room, you know? And people started saying stuff like that to me, which was super crazy. Like, how dare you? You know, like, I told you I'm finally doing drugs, you know? I'm like, how come you can't believe it's just the one drug that I'm doing, you know, when I've been lying this entire time? So, of course, the first phone call I make is to that dude that I kicked out of my house, who was on the run, you know? And he drives all the way to pick me up, and I end up detoxing, you know, off the side of the 99 near the Blade, you know, in Fresno, California for about 9 days. I'm on the phone with my family. They're not letting me talk to my son. And I'm telling them, you know, I'm sober now. Sober. Like, I can do this again. Everything's great. Everything's really good. Just give them back to me. You know, and they weren't having any of it. So the terms were that I needed to sign over temporary guardianship and go to treatment. That was the only way that I was going to get to see my son. You know, otherwise they were going to call CPS and they were just going to take him from me. So super grateful to have had that opportunity today, you know, even though I did not like it at the time and I did not have a good relationship with my family for the longest time because I couldn't believe that they were doing that to me, you know, even though I was doing it to myself. So yeah, I got to see my son after I signed this paperwork, had it notarized, and saw him for about an hour before I got on a plane to my first treatment center in Arizona. And super nice place, you know. Co-ed facility, one phone that we're all sharing, you know. And, of course, the one phone call that I want to make is to that dude who's already planning his way to Mexico. So because of the charges that he has. So, yeah, just super unhealthy at the time. Can't even make time to, like, call and check on my own son. You know what I mean? I'm still delusional, and I'm, like, removed from the drug, right? Like, that's when I know that my thinking is actually the problem. It's not the drugs and the alcohol. The drugs and the alcohol are what I use, you know, to, like, calm my mind down so I'm not thinking about myself and my problems and all of these things all the time, right? And then the other unfortunate thing, right, is that I have this allergy, right? Like, once I take one, I can't stop. You know, I go balls to the wall with it. So, I don't know, my parents were, you know, first paying out of pocket for treatment, and I also have another, like, health condition, too, and they were having to pay for that as well, you know, and they were willing to do that, and I was like, no, absolutely not, you know, like, this is too expensive, I need to come back to California where I have insurance, you know, and, like, they're still going along with it, you know what I mean? Is my son safe at the time? I'm like, okay, you want to come back to California? I did that, you know,
this is so crazy.
I came back to California. I had about a day where, like, I could pack. You know, I had to, like, get in clothes because none of my clothes fit me anymore because I gained some weight, you know, and spent a couple of days with my son, you know, and then I made my dad drive me to that janky room on the side of the 99 to say bye to that boyfriend before I drove down to Orange County, you know what I mean? And he did that. So, I don't know, this is wild. So, drove down to another treatment facility in Orange County called Costa Capri, stayed there, got another sponsor again. I don't think I mentioned to you, I got a sponsor at the last treatment center, got on that 4-step, and then I ran from that. And same thing, when I got to this treatment center, I got a sponsor. This sponsor, she wasn't very nice. You know, she asked me like a few questions to serve me on the question of alcoholism, right? Like, do you even know what your family's having for dinner? Do you think it's normal for somebody your age to have a curfew? Do you think it's normal for somebody your age to have to turn in her phone at the end of the night? Do you think it's normal for your parents to be paying for your phone bill? You know, all of these things. And I did not like what that woman had to say to me, but that really, like, set the ball in motion. You know, when I got to that 29th day, and they wanted me to stay for another 90 days. Right? And, like, my thought at the time was, like, oh, I'm just going to go back to Arizona. It's more affordable there. Like, I can't afford anything. And, like, as my parents, you know, I don't want their help. Like, I just want to do this on my own. And that's where I can be the most financially stable to take care of my kids. So, like, I have all of these plans and ideas still, you know, and I can't break that cycle. And so on the 29th day, so this apartment complex, right, like, it's open, this treatment center. 29th day, I'm hanging out in one of the girls' kitchens, we're having coffee, and I just disappear. You know, I run out the front of that apartment complex, and I hop in the car with that same dude, and we went to this janky motel room, you know, out there in Orange County that has, like, a mirror over the bed, you know? And, you know what I mean? And, I don't know. He was still getting loaded at the time. There was another lady that was with him, you know, and he was, like, you know, doing all of these things, you know, to get some money to be able to head over to Mexico and live his best life. So, I don't know. I ended up picking up my car, which he had crashed, like, previously, like, when I was really getting loaded, and he was on the run at the time, and I took the fall for that as well. You know, picked that car up, got it smog. It's falling apart. You know, later I found out, like, the wheel bearings were, like, snapped, and I was driving this car all around different states, not even just around town, from California to Arizona, maybe about 5 times back. So, yeah, I don't know. Picked me up, and I made it to Arizona probably about 3 months later to a sober living. You know what I mean? After, like, spending all of this time doing all these things. And that's just another example, right, of, like, my thinking is a problem. At this point, I'm not getting loaded. You know, he's, like, thinks that he can control me. I'm getting loaded. I'm not going to allow you to do this. Nobody's going to hand you anything, which was true, you know, but, like, that wasn't going to prevent me from getting to that drug, you know, eventually. So, I don't know. I finally was done, like, running around with him. He got his ID taken at an electronic store where he was trying to write a check and dropped him off at the border where they went to go pick him up. And I was done. Made it on my way to that sober living. I got a job for a little bit. Called that sponsor that I had in Arizona. Got on that four sip again. And, you know, he sold me this dream that we could live happily ever after in Tijuana, Mexico, and, like, have another kid. And I could bring my kid down there. We could teach him Spanish and all of this stuff. You know, super great. So, yeah, hopped in my car. You know, there's this girl sitting on the couch in the front. I had to walk down the stairs, and I'm, like, trying to sneak out instead of just saying, like, I'm leaving, you know? Like, nobody's holding me there. So that's what I do, and I drive to Tijuana. It only lasted about 10 days, you know what I mean? My fairy tale. Still the same thing were happening. And after I crossed that border back into the States, you know, I had to call my dad and ask him again for some money, for some gas. And I blamed him that I had to come back to Fresno. It's all his fault, you know, all my parents' fault. And so he did. He gave me the money, you know, and I drove back. And I slept in their guest room, you know, and for the longest time, like, I don't know, I was maybe there for about 3 weeks, you know, and my mom was trying to tell me how to make a lunch for my kid, you know, and that was, like, another, how dare you? I've been doing this the entire time. Now you wanted to help me, and you're doing it the way you want to, and I'm just, like, causing a fuss, you know, and, like, that sent me into that stage of, like, those bedevilments, right? Talks about in the book, like, I'm afraid of misery and depression, can't hold a job, can't keep relationships, I can't do anything, I don't know how to live life. I laid in that bed, you know, for about 4 weeks, Googling different ways for me to kill myself, you know? You know, unfortunately, I'm, like, too big of a coward, right? So, like, what did I do? I just went and got loaded. So, my plug was, like, 5 minutes from my parents' house, and I just started showing up again loaded around my kids, showing up loaded to baseball games, loaded, staying out all night, you know? And I, like, had this thought, like, I know you don't want me in your house, right, if I'm loaded, so I'm not going to come home. But, like, really, I just want to continue to get loaded at that point. Even with, like, going to see a psychiatrist and, like, doing all of these things, like, I'm on a little Prozac and a little Ambien, and, like, this isn't working. I need some crystal meth right now, so that's exactly what I did. And, it's too much. So, I don't know. There was a lot of God shots in that. Me going back out and me doing that, right? Like, I got pulled over with my friend that I had just met. You know, they had to find a reason to pull me over. I didn't use my turn signal. The cops pulled me to the side and they asked me, like, do you know who is in your car? You know what I mean? Like, do you know that he just got out? of prison for doing 15 years. And I'm like, no, this is my friend. We're going to the casino. You know what I mean? That's what we do. Put Beth in my vape and I go to the casino and I try to win back some money. And he got back in the car with me and he was like, I understand. Like, you don't belong out here. You know what I mean? And you have like a future, you know, and you don't belong doing some of the things that you're doing. And like, I'm worried about you, you know, like you're riding around with people that are holding guns and in your car and you're going over the speed limit and you're like doing all of these things that I just, you have no idea what you're doing, you know? And I just thought it was fun. I just kept asking everybody, like, what's your nickname? You know, like, super good. And then I like renamed them, right? Yeah, it was really good. So, super bad. So, I don't know. That guy's dead now. You know what I mean? He's dead. At a year sober, like, I found out that he died, and, like, he played a part in me getting sober this time. You know, and, like, I don't get to see him again. I know he told me he didn't ever want to see me out there again. You know what I mean? But it's just crazy. Crazy to think. That's another thing that I've, like, witnessed, too. And why I believe so much in Alcoholics Anonymous and in these steps and in that book, and why I do things religiously the way that I do, because, like, this is life or death for me. You know, it's at a certain point where, like, I wanted to die. You know, and, like, we forget those things. I can't play the tape through. You know? All of those incomprehensible, demoralizing things that I did while I was getting drunk and loaded, you know, like, I can't bring that into my memory with sufficient force. Could have been a week or a month ago. You know, it told me that in the book. And I just think of, like, the really good times, right? And, like, we're sitting here laughing about all these crazy things, but, like, I can't imagine what my family must think and the danger that I could have put them in. You know what I mean? The danger that I put my kid in. You know? So, I don't know. So this time, I decided to go back to treatment. Of course, I'm going to go to a treatment center. Super nice. You know, they do, like, yoga and acupuncture and equine therapy. If you don't know what equine therapy is, that's horse therapy. Right? You don't get to ride the horses. You just get to feel their spirit, you know, and see if it, like, meshes with yours. Super, super fun. I cried for 60 days when I got there, and they also take kids. You know, I had this really bright idea that, like, I'm only going to get sober this time if my kid can come with me. And, of course, his dad wants to come back into his life at that time, and I already have a custody order with him. You know, my parents aren't willing to break the law, I guess. How they view it, you know? So, if he was to pick him up at 5:30 on Friday and he showed up, they would hand him over, you know, and I was pissed. I remember they, like, came for a family weekend at this treatment center, and I told the tech, like, I didn't invite them. I only wanted them to bring my son. You could tell them to go home, and they just drove 4 hours, you know? So, and that was with me, like, working the steps and finally doing the fourth step, you know? Like, super crazy. But when I finally, like, had, you know, when I had another woman, like, tell me the truth about myself, right? Those character defects. Like, I have a God complex. I'm fearful. You know, like, I have this pride, this ego, selfish, self-centered. You know, like, I play this actor, right? People retaliate because, like, I'm either really, really nice and, like, I'm just trying to get the thing that I want from you. And then if I don't get that, then I'm, like, really, really mean. So, it doesn't matter. I'm just trying to constantly control things and I'm constantly trying to play God. And, I had to learn, actually, I was told, you know, you need to take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth because you don't know shit, you know? My sponsor had me to turn up to the front page of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she asked me what was on there, and I said nothing, and she said, that's what you know. You know? So, I had to have that. I had to have somebody, again, be that to me, because I was in, like, all of this shame and this guilt, and, like, I thought I had all of this trauma, and I thought I was different, you know? Like, I couldn't do anything but listen to the differences instead of listening to the similarities. You know? So, I don't know, like, what willed me into doing this test. I just know that, like, I was, like, feeling a little bit better, you know, and I didn't want to die, you know? So she told me to, like, read with the other girls in my house constantly, you know? And once I finally decided, too, that I wasn't going to go back home and that I needed to build this foundation and I needed to like have all of these commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that it was like made like a really serious thing for me because of my circumstance, you know. My sponsor also told me too, like, now you're uniquely qualified to help somebody. So I don't know if any of you sitting in here, if you thought that you were going to come into one of these rooms and like help somebody, raise your hand. No? That's what we're here for, right? We're uniquely qualified to do that. You know, we're a bunch that wouldn't mix, but we come together with this common peril, right? And that's that alcoholism. Whatever your drug of choice may be, you know, I did AA steps, right? Because it's my thinking, again, going to reiterate on that, you know. So, I don't know, I made the decision to finally go ahead and go to this sober living called Thy Will Be Done. It says that in the book a few times too, and I constantly use that as a tool in my spiritual toolkit. They have like a super crazy structure. You had to go to a certain amount of meetings, and like my sponsor was super involved at the time too, and 60 days sober, I became a general service representative for Thursday women and children's meeting, and had a commitment at almost every meeting that I went to. Just started getting my name out there, and like I didn't have a car at the time, right? Because now like I'm trying to repair the crash that happened, and I'm trying to do things the right way and do it financially myself, you know. And my sponsor told me to leave my family alone. You know, only call them to ask them like how their day was and to not talk about myself. So like I had to practice all of these things and practice not asking them for money or anything and like try to get me out of that situation, you know. And like I rode a bus to work, and then at lunch I went down to a detox and I put myself in front of the newcomer, you know, and I tried to like ask them what they were in for, how many times they had been to that detox, you know, ask the same kind of questions that were asked to me and hopefully disturb them and plant that seed about alcoholism, you know. Didn't force it down their throat, right? Like, we don't talk to that spiritual hilltop, you know. I'm not anybody, but like today I just want to see other people get this, what was so freely given to me, you know. That woman didn't have to take her time, right? And like stuck around a little bit longer, and then I realized I was helping her more than she was helping me, you know what I mean? Like, she was like, I didn't think you were going to make it, you know. And that's like a harsh reality too, but she's like, but you kept coming back, you know? So here you are, doing all this AA stuff and super inconvenienced by Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And super grateful for that. I don't know, I had a lot of like financial debt when I came in here, when it came to that ninth step. I don't know if anybody's like heard, when you go and you make your amends, right? There's like 1 out of 10 that are gonna go like really bad. And of course, like the one is my mom. And she tells me, like, I don't need to change anything. You need to change. You need to do all of this stuff, right? And, like, at that point, of course, like, I had been a tornado, like, roaring through her life, you know? Just crazy. So I accepted that at that time, and I just, like, left her alone. You know, like, the family is sick as well. Other relationships that I have as well, people, everyone's sick. So I look at everybody as a sick person, and I say the sick man's prayer in the morning, you know? Hopefully I can, like, use that as a tool. I use that as a tool today to, like, pray for others. Don't have to agree or like other people, but, like, I have this sense of peace in me today because of that tool that was given to me. So, yeah, I don't know. I became, like, a house manager at a sober living. I worked in treatment for a little bit. Did that whole thing, and, like, that afforded me the opportunity to pay back a lot of my financial amends, right? Like, I was $50,000 in debt. And my parents were paying for my mortgage at the time because I always, like, acquire some material things for, like, a little bit, you know, and then I burn it to the ground. So I was able to, like, sell that house and, like, pay them back for the treatment that they, you know, paid for me, and still paying them to this day. You know, like, I don't owe anybody any money except for the Department of Education. So I just applied to go back to school and have, like, another amend. That I'm having to make now at almost 3 years sober. You know, like, they just keep popping up. Things keep coming to light all the time. There's always going to be some work to be done. Another funny amend that I had to make was when I finally got my apartment and was able to have my son move with me after, you know, some time with him being with my family, because they just wanted me to get better. We want to see the proof. We want to, like, build that trust with you. And we don't think you're ready to have him, you know. And, like, mind you, you're probably right, like, I'm not financially stable, and, like, I'm doing all of these meetings and just trying to put my program first, right? This program has afforded me a life today, Right, so like I have to continue to be able to put that first. So I went to this U-Haul and I tried to rent a U-Haul to move. And the guy was like, there's like a block on here, you know, $250, you know. And I was like, oh crap, you know, I forgot that I had basically scammed the U-Haul and like didn't turn it back in and used somebody else's credit card at the time. You know what I mean? And I basically had to pay that off right then and there. I'm like, I was able to do that, you know? And the guy was like, oh, you should probably just call somebody, probably, like, you know, there was fraud or something. And I was like, yeah, absolutely, you know, because it was me. You know? The other person that I was, like, running around with. So, yeah, it was fraud for sure. So, I don't know. But, yeah, so my son, he was able to come down to Orange County with me for a little bit. Really super weird, right? Like, again, I'm managing a Sport Clips salon, you know? They gave me, like, a credit card and stuff that has my name on it so I can buy supplies for the salon and, like, all of these things. Like, responsibility. I'm accountable to people today, you know? I'm able to, like, do all of these things when I wasn't even able to, like, get up and take a shower, you know? So, I don't know. I don't even know. So for me, right, like I still have to continue to do these maintenance tests, right? In the morning, when I read those pages, it gives me the opportunity to like humble myself to know like what my character defects are. If I encounter somebody before that, like I'm like this raging, selfish bitch, you know what I mean? So like I have to do those things. I have to like center myself and I hop on a morning meeting and, you know, I take other women through the book, right? And I would say, I mean, in the 12th step, right, like, it says that it's meant to be suggestive only, and, like, hopefully you'll have, like, a spiritual awakening as, like, a result of these steps, you know what I mean? And, like, I got my first sponsee to check her for the through steps, you know, with, like, 90 days sober, and, of course, I, like, fight this God idea, right? Like, I'm super agnostic, don't want to believe in any of that, grew up in a Catholic church, and I don't want to be condemned, you know, like, I've already been to hell, all of these things, you know, and, I'm just, like, doing the motions, right, like, I'm checking off, like, this task, my sponsor's telling me to find God, and, like, do a third step, and things I won't be done, and do all these things, and, like, it's just a motion at this point, right, but when I finally took that first woman through the steps, and I saw her get her life back, right, and all I did was, like, read a book with her, I didn't do anything, you know. All I did was, like, make myself available, like my sponsor made time for me and read that book and take her through the steps. I didn't have to, like, chase her around. She was already at a point in her journey where she was, like, ready, you know? And I don't know. She's just a miracle. It's a miracle, you know what I mean? So I just continue to do that and watch other sponsors, watch other women get their kids back, right? Like, we all think that we can't do this. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather just run away because I know that I have a safe place for my kids to go. You know what I mean? I'd rather just go get loaded because I feel like they can do it better than I can. You know, but, like, just practicing those things and, like, knowing that God's got me. You know, today, like, I have only been back in town to Fresno for about 10 weeks. I'm going back to school to get my bachelor's. You know, that's how I found out about the Department of Education. You know, me having a bachelor with them. So, and my parents offered me to live back in their home and give me a key to their home, you know? So, just doing that, living amends to them. Like, I never thought that I would, like, repair those relationships with them. At a certain point, like, I wanted nothing to do with them. And I was, like, wondering when either God was, like, going to remove them from my life, you know? And, like, just let me be. Or, like, when he was going to repair them. And this, I feel like, is that time, you know? I don't know. I think that's all I have, you guys, and I will review my night later. Thank you.